What's up, everyone? We're back. Dr. Lee Unhinged.
Dr. Maxfield.
And I'm Dr. Shah. And today we have a bunch of heavy-hitting topics for you. What are we getting into?
This is a recap of the episode we didn't shoot while we were at the AAD. A lot of life events, a lot of travel. We're also going to talk about some controversies at the AAD. A lot of controversy. Everything is controversial today, actually. I was just thinking of our topic list. There's like, everything is controversial.
We're going to kick it off with a product of the day to keep things light. Quick life updates here. So Dr. Maxfield and I were at the AAD, American Academy of Dermatology meeting in San Diego. This is the biggest dermatology conference in the United States. Now, it's not the biggest dermatology conference in the world, but in the United States, it's the biggest one. Most dermatologists go to this conference in San Diego. A lot of brands go to this, and a lot of dermatologists internationally come to this. And a lot of times they're unveiling the latest and greatest in technology and research in dermatology.
Yeah. So this is where you kind of can get caught up to date with not only the mainstays, the foundational things of dermatology, you also get exposed to what is coming down the pipeline, what's the new innovation, technology, products, all of these things across the board, from complex surgical derm to medical derm to tropical derm to infectious disease to whatever. This is where you go to learn from the best in the world. It's a pretty big experience. I actually really liked this trip. Last year was New Orleans. The energy was too high for me on that one. San Diego felt a little more chill. Coming back, I was talking to some of the residents and some of the other people who went, and they're like, yeah, this year was a little better. It was not quite so bananas, but I know everyone was still having a good time going out, talking, socializing at night. So that was good. That was good.
Okay. Well, let's tell the truth. Dr. Maxfield came to a party and then he played chess at that party. And then I had a party the next night that he was invited to. I was hosting this party and he didn't even show up.
Yeah, I kind of felt bad for the second day. Little context. So I only played chess for 5 minutes. And that was at Jill's behest. Like, she was one of our managers and she was like, hey, they have a chessboard. Did you see that? I was like, oh, no, let's sit down and play. So there was that. But the night before, all of the big things, the L'Oreal Gala, the Air party by Neutrogena, there was a freaking party in my parking lot. So I was just in this normal Airbnb. There's a parking lot right next to me. And from 1 till 4 a.m., cars piled in, opened their doors, blasted their music. And so Saturday morning, I was dead. I was like, I'm going to get through the day. And then Saturday night, I was like, I give up on life. I'm just done.
Okay.
That should have come out.
You missed it. We could have gotten a good photo together on the black carpet. Know, it was all I set up those. For us. You know, all the homies were there. You weren't there. We got all these great photos. Guess who's MIA? Dr. Maxfield.
I know.
Special invite to this thing. All right. Well, fair. Okay. Other major update. I think this is going to get released the day of my brand launch, this podcast episode. So you guys have already heard about it on the previous episodes, but I am launching a brand called Remedy. We have 3 products coming out. I won't go into too many details about it, but the entire products are meant to be all-in-one products for different skin conditions. So we looked at the problem. We created the solution. We packed like 9, 10, 11 ingredients into one formula to solve each skin condition. We have a remedy for dark spots, which is 11 actives. It's incredible. We have a remedy for pore size, which is 5 different actives combined in one formula. And we have a remedy for dry lips. And those are the 3 products that we're launching with. It's free US shipping just on day one. So definitely go check it out at remedyskin.com if it is releasing the day that you are listening to this, which should be March 19th. So definitely check it out at remedyskin.com. I appreciate all your love and support. And without all of you, I wouldn't have even been able to launch this brand. So I'm just genuinely so appreciative of all of you. And I hope that you love the products and I hope that you see all the love that I put into the products as well.
Yeah, super excited for this drop. And again, we said this in another video, but I'm really excited for the 3-month mark where I think everyone's going to be starting to see the results and we're getting like before and afters dropped on social media. So it's going to be awesome. I can't wait for these to get into people's hands. For those of you who are at the AAD, like a handful of you actually got to see these products. Dr. Shah and his crew were handing some of these goodie bags out. Some people get a little bit of a head start. So another great thing that happened for those in attendance.
Definitely. All right. So let's talk about product of the day. I just wanted to get an idea. Like, you know, just I have a room full of skincare that I get. And I want to know what Dr. Maxfield has tried that's worth trying.
So I'm appreciating cleansers right now. My skin got destroyed at the AAD. By day four or day three even, my skin was like very red. Cheeks were red, bumps everywhere. Not even pimples, just like textured, bumpy, red skin. And I think it was because I neglected to bring a face wash. And so although this can be simple, it seems to be essential. Also, the water there was terrible. They wouldn't even let me in the ocean because there was like this crazy combination of this. The locals told me there was an oil spill up north. There was a sewage spill down south and it had rained and there was bacteria counts in the water before that even happened.
You went in the water?
No, they wouldn't let me in. Like the surf shops weren't renting boards and stuff. I would have.
So do you think the water coming at like it came into our like sewage, like into the general water supply?
Yeah, I have no idea. Probably not. But I mean, if it gets that dirty, like that's just a catastrophe.
I mean, I've noticed that a lot of the cleansers like at Airbnbs or hotels, I mean, they're some of the worst.
They are.
Cleansers. Like if you look at the ingredients list, it's all methyl isochlorothiazolinone. It's just loaded with allergens and fragrances that no one's ever heard of. Like very rarely do you find a good soap within like the stock of the bathroom. Mm-hmm.
So I came back, just immediately washed my face. That was the thing I was looking forward to the most. So I grabbed the one I liked lately. I think I've talked about this before with Sashi States of Skin. They have these saponins cleansers that came out. They're high end. Like, do you need these? You know, do you need much of anything? But they are very nice. They're luxurious. The experience is nice. So I just washed my face, enjoyed that experience. My skin cleared up, like started clearing up the next day. So there's something to this. But I think water nailed me, destroyed me more than I've ever seen and more quickly than I've ever seen before.
That's a real thing. We've talked about this before. Water can shred your skin depending on how hard that water is and what that calcium carbonate concentration is. So that's why we're kind of big fans of water filters lately. So yes, I do think it makes a huge difference, and not using the cleanser in your bathroom, because we know that when you combine bad water with a harsh cleanser, it actually makes those cleansers even harsher. I'm just surprised that at the AED, they give out like tons of free samples of skincare, and that you didn't grab anything that they were giving away.
No one had cleansers. Neutrogena. I was looking in everybody's goodie bag. Nobody had cleansers.
Unbelievable.
And I didn't go to the store, to my detriment. I just didn't like walk across the street and go to the store.
That's fair. All right. So let's see. My product of the day. You know, I'm actually getting more and more interested in just more complex skincare, like skincare that can do more for you. So this Peter Thomas Roth Peptide Skinjection, it's their Amplified Wrinkle Fix Serum. It's a very, very long name, but ultimately what it takes is a combination of peptides that have been proven, like Matrixyl, Argireline, and Matrixyl Synth. So it takes these combination of peptides, right? We keep hearing about the word peptides. Peptides are just, you know, these combination of amino acids. And when you look at different peptides, they all have kind of different functions on the skin. So it's not like retinol and retinol does the same thing, no matter what, depending on the type of retinol. I mean, they all have sort of the same function when you look at retinoids. But when you look at peptides, they all have very, very, very different functions. You have copper peptides, you have, you know, palmityl tripeptide, you have, argireline or, acetylhexapeptide 8. Like, this is where skincare is starting to get more and more complicated, but instead of making it just super simple and having, you know, one peptide in their formula, they have a combination of a lot of the proven peptides in one formula so that you can get the benefits of those. And the cool thing about peptides is they mix really well with other ingredients. So something like this, which has argireline, which has been shown to have a Botox-like effect, so it can give you that same relaxed-looking appearance of your wrinkles. It's combined with Matrixyl, which is shown to boost collagen. And then you can combine that with your nightly retinol, and you would have a routine that could target multiple things, especially for anti-aging. So this is a really cool serum that I've been liking quite a bit. And I'm hoping to see more interesting products to come out this year that are just pushing the sort of narrative and boundaries of skincare. So this is one of those products, and something that, you know, I've been using quite a bit and seeing some decent results with.
Yeah, this year I've been shocked by the products coming out this year. I can't remember all of them, but I feel like there's four or five back to back that I thought just hit. They were really good. Peter Thomas Roth one, I told you off stage, so to speak, that I think it's really gimmicky because it's like, oh, it's a needle, but it's not a needle. This is an injectable, not an injectable. And then the box, you open it up and he's like, "Hi, I'm Peter Thomas Roth. Thank you for using my doohickey." But so super gimmicky.
Did you get like a PR package or mm-hmm. something? Oh, yeah. I didn't see this.
You didn't see that? Oh, it's
no, I didn't get the PR package.
I'm not on the PR list. It came That's to someone crazy. In my room, and they started talking when they like walked in. It freaked them out. But anyway, maybe I'll use this as a launching point for the video. It's super gimmicky, but however, it delivers. Like, there's the gimmick is just like to catch your eye, and I think that's reasonable. The product itself, formulation is completely legitimate. I'm a big fan of that one too.
Yeah, when it comes to like marketing around products, and we've always said this in the past, great products need to figure out a way to get into your hands.
Yes.
Right. So even when you have great products, you almost have to have gimmicky marketing in some ways, unfortunately. Right. And I hate that. Right. I wish you could just be like, this product does this. Thanks. Bye. But it's just like our thumbnails and it's just like the titles to our videos. If we made them super accurate, like no one would click on them. And so part of the challenge is like, we're trying to give you this education. Right. But the barrier to that education is that it could be sometimes boring for some people. And so we try to make it more entertaining. We try to make it simplified. We try to, you know, have fun when we're chatting with each other to make it more interesting for all of you so that it's easier to sort of receive that information. And part of that is being a little clickbaity. And it's the same thing with great products. They need to sort of fall into that trap as well to get into people's hands. So like, I bet you there's a ton of great products that are just never discovered because they didn't have the right marketing engine on them.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely true.
But yeah, especially as long as you're not lying to people and you're not, you know, misleading them on the benefits of something, then I think it's fair game if it's just more clickbaity stuff. But yeah, so all right. So those are the two products. Now let's talk about something big that happened. We're talking about benzene in your benzyl peroxide. Okay. Benzene. This is a huge topic, a massive topic. It took over all the headlines. I posted about it on Instagram, but I haven't had a chance to talk to Dr. Maxfield about it. So I kind of want to hear your opinion. Maybe let's give a little bit of background here. There's a lab in Connecticut that bought a bunch of products from the shelves of stores that are benzyl peroxide products. They tested maybe 65 or so. I don't know the exact number. Products, consumer products that had benzyl peroxide and some prescription products that have benzyl peroxide in them. They tested them for benzene at room temperature and then they heat them up to, you know, 150 degrees or so and then tested them again over several weeks. Like, so they baked them for several weeks and then they also were testing the benzene levels along the way. Now, going back to like the 1940s, there was some studies that showed that benzyl peroxide under certain conditions could break down into benzene. So this is not something that we didn't know about. It's just that we didn't think that it occurred in high levels in our consumer products because these products are meant to be stabilized. And benzene, the reason why this is important is because benzene is a known carcinogen. It's been shown to cause leukemia. It's not something that we want more of. But to give you context, there is benzene everywhere. Just by sitting in a car and just by walking through traffic and just by being in New York City or on a plane, you're being exposed to benzene, low amounts of benzene every day. But we try to reduce the impact of that because there certainly is untoward side effects of being exposed to high levels of benzene. So that's the background and love to hear Dr. Maxfield's take on this.
Yeah, I think the first summative statement is something everyone agrees on, and that's benzene is bad, right? Like, this is not a good substance. This ideally would not be anywhere, including our external environment, like Dr. Shah mentioned. When I saw the headline, I actually was not that excited. And the reason is, we saw this with sunscreen, but we also saw this, and most people didn't see or didn't talk about this. I think it was last year after the sunscreen thing. It also was then found in a lot of consumer goods, like dry shampoos. I was just pulling up a list, but it was in a lot. Antiperspirants, deodorant, conditioners, dry shampoos, hand sanitizers. I mean, this is not the first time that we've been told this is in products. And even after the initial exposure, it's like, what's the clinical significance of it? Meaning that in a lab, you can create benzene out of this product. The second extrapolation of that is, does that finding is that realistic? In the real world scenario, does that also occur? But then there's a second part of this, and I'm sure we'll expound more on the first part. The second part that I'm becoming and have been always kind of critical on is what makes Valisher the expert lab? Why is their testing so much more reliable, this one lab, so much more reliable than per se, let's say, multiple other labs that a brand might use that are also independent labs? Because we see this a lot on social media. You have one voice who is an expert, but for some reason, that individual's expert opinion is weighed above all others. And so I don't feel confident in Valisher necessarily either, in that their testing is completely accurate or representative more than other independent labs and testers of the same product. That's why I think following multiple people is a best option for someone who's consuming social media, and also having multiple tests and looking at the entire body of evidence when possible is going to give you a more accurate picture, not just one scary or not just one positive report on any given topic.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a very measured approach. You know, everyone loves a good headline, right? Yeah, and everyone loves a good, you know, fear-mongering tactic where you hear that this thing has this and then you're like, throw it away. And, you know, you want to be the first to report it. And Dr. Maxfield and I have talked about this a bunch of times. A lot of times when you're first, you're going to be wrong. And a lot of times taking your time to respond and be thoughtful is a wise approach. Now, I think as a dermatologist, we are always going to be a little bit more cautious than people who don't treat patients. What I say by that is that it's very easy to say, well, based on the conditions under which this was tested and the credibility of the lab that it was tested in, I think it's okay to use benzoyl peroxide. And I think that's also a fair take, but when you treat patients and you know a lot of patients have concerns about what they're putting on their skin, and then also you have some degree of liability for, you know, what you're telling your patients and recommending to your patients. And if they've seen an article that says, you know, your benzoyl peroxide has benzene in it, and then you recommend this benzoyl peroxide product to them, then they're going to hold you accountable as well for not giving them the education that they need. So, you know, we're just a little bit more cautious because we do treat patients and we think about our patients when we recommend things. And so I'm always going to err on the side of, okay, sure, this report came out. I take it with a massive grain of salt. However, I think it would be very reasonable to stop your benzoyl peroxide, especially if it was on that list of products that had been tested, even though it seems that all products will degrade to benzene to some extent. I think it would be reasonable to also continue it if you decided you wanted to continue it, and then try to just store it at a cooler temperature so that it doesn't break down as rapidly or at such a high concentration of benzene. I think all of those things are reasonable things to do, and you can decide as the person using these products what your risk tolerability it is. I don't think that there's a correct answer. Now, I think in the meantime, we do need more testing. Whether you decide to stop or continue, I would err on the side of stopping just to be safe, and then switch to something like salicylic acid or sulfur, or maybe just even use your retinoid alone, or use oral medication or topical antibiotic. There's a lot of options for acne out there that we're not limited to only using benzoyl peroxide. So I think it would be reasonable to pause for a little bit. Now, in the meantime, while they do more testing, the FDA is going to look into this themselves. There's going to be other independent labs that are going to look into this. The brands that were on that list are certainly going to do their own testing now, and then we'll probably come up with some type of conclusion on what the best path is forward. So I think that that's a reasonable path forward, is not to be so reactionary, but to take a break and think, okay, what is the truth here, and get to the bottom of that. Now, there is separate concerns about this lab. One, they've already been investigated by the FDA. The FDA did put out a report that said that a lot of their testing methods were not standard, and that they didn't follow proper scientific protocols so that those results could be reproduced. So this is already a document that came out last year, and this is, you know, well documented by the FDA. Also, the brands, of course, GSK, I think, and Unilever, I could be wrong on this, also said that they didn't think the lab testing was accurate last time these reports came out. And of course, they are obviously protecting themselves, and so they also have a conflict of interest. So why would this lab put this out? They are in the business of testing products for benzene. They also get massive government contracts. The more that they put these reports out, the more publicity they get, and the more contracts they get from the government to be testing drugs that the FDA is not testing. So it could be a good thing that we have an independent lab, just buying products and testing them. It could be also that they have their own things to gain. And it did come out in the report that the owner of the lab does own a patent that he filed last year or a few months ago to stabilize benzyl peroxide so that it does not degrade into benzene. And so he holds the patent on stabilizing benzene. So, you know, I mean, exposing this information, whether it's true or false, and I don't know, you know, we don't know. I think it's too soon to jump to that conclusion. Whether it's true or false, if it does end up being true, or it ends up being false, the person who stands to gain the most ultimately would probably be Valisher the lab right now. But that doesn't mean that it's not right. I mean, we have whistleblowers in many industries that have exposed things that the government has not exposed. And so, you know, I'm just saying, take everything with a grain of salt and not be so reactionary.
Yeah. The problem with this, benzyl peroxide is not perhaps like sunscreen, but anytime you mention sunscreen now, it causes cancer is in the conversation. And if you ever dig deeper, and I did this on a post of mine, very deliberately, I just wanted to see exactly what the response would be. And the post was basically like, yeah, sunscreen doesn't cause cancer. All of my patients wish they had sunscreen. The ones who have skin cancer, it wasn't invented when they were born. And most of the comments were like positive. A lot of comments were like, no, sunscreen causes cancer. It's the benzene. But they didn't understand. And there's like this irreversible intertwined relationship now in people's minds, like sunscreen equals cancer causing. And it's because of the benzene. And so there's like this irreversible harm to sunscreen's reputation purely because of that one report. Yeah. And so now, you know, benzyl peroxide, you mentioned a lot of alternatives. It may not, even if it falls, it may not be as significant to people's health as the mistrust in sunscreen, but it's not warranted necessarily. At least the long-term repercussions of it. With sunscreen, it certainly wasn't, because it wasn't as directly chemically related to the ingredient as benzyl peroxide to benzene is. But that's one of the problems too, is just the long-term reputation damage and distrust people have in an ingredient or product that may actually cause them more harm than good long-term.
That's a good point that I didn't even think of is, yes, like I do think it harms, especially when it comes to sunscreen. Like I said, benzyl peroxide, there are alternatives that people can use. But when it comes to sunscreen, protecting your skin is so important. And I think broadly, the headlines all said, you know, cancer causing agent found in sunscreens, people just quit sunscreens. And there will be people inevitably that get cancer from purposefully avoiding sunscreen as a result of these reports. And then the misinformation that spirals out of that, right? Because people take the headline and they run with it, right? Like we even see that, like even in our own dermatology community, you know, with the benzyl peroxide report, with the sunscreen report, with the hair loss and Olaplex, all of these reports, even dermatologists just take the headline and run with it. And a lot of times the meat of the article, the nuance of the article that's so important to communicate to people is lost along the way. And then people say, oh, well, Olaplex causes hair loss or sunscreen causes cancer. And everyone just sort of believes it at face value without diving deeper into the details. And so I think this is super important, can cause a lot of public harm when you don't try to delineate between these things. And so it's so important for us as people who communicate science to be responsible for that nuance, especially when it comes to big news like this that could keep people from using sunscreen. That's a really good point.
Yeah. So I'm with Dr. Shaw, though. Pause the benzene for now. I think that's certainly a very reasonable and measured take. See how everybody reacts, what further data shows. You can probably reintroduce it. It's kind of hard to follow when these things get reintroduced because the buzz isn't quite as much as things resolve. Like what happened with the sunscreens and the benzene? I don't know. I honestly am not sure if all of the brands changed anything or nothing. Who knows? We're just kind of
there
back
were a
to
lot
it.
Of lawsuits filed. There was a lot of class actions, a lot of payouts from the brands. Some of them disputed the findings. Some of them recalled products. So that's ultimately what ended up happening last time. There's a lot of litigation. And again, certain people benefit from this litigation. So it's just, you know, I Dr. Maxfield, that kind of knows this about me. I'm kind of a conspiracy theorist to some extent. So like also take everything I say with a grain of salt to some extent. But
the older
so that's,
get, the more I think we both become conspiracy theories, the more I get, the older I get, the more I'm like, oh, weird. My dad was right. Like, what the heck?
No, I mean, I think the more we learn, the more we realize like how nefarious the world is, you know, and maybe it's the, we don't know. Sometimes we don't even know who the bad guy is anymore, you know? So yeah, usually it's not the one everyone is telling you is the bad guy. That's usually the case. So final conclusion on benzyl peroxide. I think it would be very reasonable to stop using your benzyl peroxide products for now until further information comes out from the FDA. And that information should come soon. And hopefully your dermatologist will keep you updated. I also think it would be reasonable to continue if it's something that's really helping you. I think that the risk right now is low. I've never had anyone get, you know, cancer from a benzyl peroxide product. But again, that would take years of exposure to show. So it's something that we just don't have enough information on. Next up and last up on this list is we're going to be talking about one of the things that happened at the dermatology conference. It was covered by the news, and that's why we're going to cover it today. It's a little bit more political, but ultimately there was a resolution that was put forward by, say dozens of dermatologists to eliminate all DEI or diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts by the AAD. And some of those efforts are, you know, getting people scholarships and opportunities and that have diverse backgrounds, essentially. And those are some of the efforts. A lot of those programs have been successful over the past few years. In, you know, raising money and, you know, getting funding and increasing diversity and increasing research regarding skin of color. And so there was a motion to have this removed. And the motion is available online. You can look at it online. I won't go too much into the details of it, but they wanted to get rid of all DEI efforts by the AAD. This caused a massive uproar on social media and in traditional media. It, you know, trickled over into Allure, into Bloomberg. It was covered. It was on Fox News. And of course, you know, based on how you feel about DEI, there was, you know, one news channel saying that, you know, this is the worst thing ever. And then on the other news channels, they're saying, you know, DEI should be abolished everywhere. And so there was a lot of discourse within the dermatology community, and there was a big showdown of sorts at the AAD meeting in San Diego this past week. I was present in the room during this meeting, and people presented their arguments for or against the resolution. And ultimately, the resolution did not pass, and DEI initiatives were kept intact. And new task force were created to make sure that everyone felt safe and included. And ultimately, a lot of crazy things were said at this meeting, shocking things of sorts. You know, regardless of how you feel about DEI, you know, this is not a political podcast. I will say in dermatology specifically, there is certainly a lack of education on skin of color. And it is the field where it's incredibly important to understand the differences on how things present in skin of color. Redness looks different, or irritation, inflammation looks different in darker skin tones than it does in lighter skin tones. Lasers respond differently depending on skin tones. Medications can respond differently depending on skin tones. And so it's really, really important that we have more research in all skin tones so that we can take better care of our patients. There's good studies that show that most dermatology residents, when they graduate, feel inadequate to treat skin of color based on the education that they got, depending on the demographics they treated in residency. And so these efforts are really important, especially in the field of dermatology, to increase education. We also know that in skin of color, melanoma is diagnosed much later and more aggressively, leading to higher mortality rates because it's not recognized as easily in skin of color. So these are things that are very data-driven. And so when you have increased diversity within a field, it leads to more research efforts in that space, and ultimately probably better outcomes for our patients. So, you know, that's pretty much the outcome. I think, you know, the efforts and division that was created by these efforts is not a good thing for the field of dermatology. It put us all under a microscope, didn't paint us all in the best light. And so I'm kind of glad that they didn't move forward with that resolution ultimately, but that's just my opinion.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a difficult topic, if only because, you know, and I didn't get to hear the other side of the argument, and it may not have even been of value. I really don't know. But I think that what you mentioned is definitely true, in that there is not only like this objective data-driven textbook knowledge that you do need to take care of different skin types, skin tones, stuff like that, but there is also the hands-on experience. So I've talked about this before, in that when I was a medical student and when I was a resident, most of my decisions were based off of studies. I could cite them back and forth. I was like, oh yeah, this study published in this year showed that like 75% of people would improve with this treatment as compared to this. And here's the physiology as to why. Now, while that's important, there is also, especially during practice, this hands-on component, where if you don't have a large amount of people in or a diverse patient database, you probably will not have a good amount of experience to make good decisions or accurate decisions when it comes to treatment, not only with objective things, but also with some of the subjective recommendations and treatment-based protocols as well. And the laser thing is absolutely real. When it comes to procedures and light devices, I mean, think about it. I feel like I see so many bad outcomes, and who knows why, but part of it could be lack of familiarity, especially with darker skin tones, when you're addressing this population. So I think some good certainly will come out of this. I definitely think that's very, very reasonable as well. And, you know, I even think, interestingly, this actually goes back to a conversation we had probably 5 years ago. It was on, we even talked about it. It may have been in one of our first YouTube videos, but it goes back to like board scores and things as well. But one consideration too, when it just more specifically to board scores and testing, that was one of the reasons that I think this initiative also spearheaded the removal of board scores to an extent, especially for the step two. And so I guess a possibility or one thing I think that's helped us and helps a lot of international medical graduates is your ability to distinguish yourself on paper. So I think it's important that that stays intact. People have the objective opportunity to put their best selves forward on paper as well, to help them stand apart if they need to, especially if they come from a disenfranchised or, underrepresented, difficult background where they don't have all of the tools available growing up. So they can put something forward on paper.
Yeah. And, I think that being underrepresented or being disadvantaged in any particular way is not just based on, you know, your skin color or where you grew up or what your ethnic background is, but there's so many other factors that go into, you know, being, you know, underserved or underrepresented. And, you know, I think trying to get more diversity of thought and background is super important just in general. I do think it elevates everybody. I think you see that if you travel a lot, like I do, when you meet people of diverse cultures and backgrounds, I mean, it just changes your perspective on the world. So I do hope more people have exposure to just a larger demographic of people. I think it makes a big difference. I don't think we need to get away with, go away from, you know, it's board scores or testing. I mean, I think these things are important to at least have objective measures of like, and in some ways they're not necessarily objective. There's interesting things about IQ testing. I studied this when I was a psychology major, but I do think that having those at least, you know, create some type of standardization. I think standardization is important, especially in medicine when you're treating patients. You know, is the difference between, you know, a 260 board score and a 255 or a 250 board score going to be meaningful in terms of, you know, whether or not you can treat a patient well, especially within that, like within a standard deviation, ultimately. That I don't know. I mean, I don't know. We can look at that and, you know, but is one or 2 points, is incremental higher scores, is that, you know, the major difference? I think, you know, that's something that we could look at actually and study, like, you know, the difference between, you know, a standard deviation away from each other or like 20, 30 points, you know, maybe there is some type of gap of knowledge there. But I think when you look at minor differences, I don't know how much it makes a difference. I mean, that's something to be debated.
Yeah, to be sure. To be sure.
Yeah. But I think this is a much larger topic, but that's an update in case anyone had seen the headlines on this. That resolution was defeated, and things will move forward as they were. And so no changes in the field of dermatology. So it's better if we stay out of the headlines, let's be honest. All right. Thank you all so much for tuning in. Thank you for all your support with everything. Definitely check out remedyskin.com. This is, you know, it's everything I've worked on for the past 2 years. It's, you know, the products came out exactly how I wanted them to, and they really do represent everything that I believe about skincare. They represent all the research that's existed in these different types of conditions. And so hopefully you see that and love that, and definitely give me some feedback in the comments and let me know what you think of what we created when you look at the website.
Awesome. Check that out. Super excited. Thanks for being with us, and we will see you next week.
We'll see you next time.